950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Good morning to all of you joining us locally by radio and streaming online. We appreciate you tuning in. Today is Sunday, September 17th, 2017. I'm your host, Maddie Love, in studio today with Hertzy Hertz, and we are happy to also be joined in studio with the talented, awesome, and, well, just pretty freaking awesome, Marissa Alexa McCool, a successful writer, activist, podcaster, and former Skype guest from back on episode 395. Today, we're going to be doing a roundtable discussion of the intersection of politics and religion. We're probably going to agree with each other more than we disagree, so if you have a different opinion, we'd love to hear it. This is an open conversation, and we welcome and encourage listener interaction with your phone calls to 952-946-6205, your emails to radio@mnatheist.org, tweet us at Atheist Talk, or send us a message over at facebook.com/atheisttalk. The number is live, but you can always email, tweet, or send us a message while you're back listening to this fantastic podcast. Hertzy, Marissa, thank you for joining me this gorgeous fall Sunday morning to discuss the love and worship of Jesus Christ, Allah, and Wonder Woman.
Well, you said that we're going to agree on everything, and I just say you used way too many adjectives to describe me, and I find that offensive. And we're going to spend the rest of the time talking about how you do not deserve the platform that you have to spread such misogynistic lies.
Oh,
that's not relevant in any way, is it?
No platforming.
I was going to say she didn't use enough adjectives.
No.
Yeah.
No.
We could probably list like 3 or 4 more.
Let's not.
All of them are awesome.
I'm just still impressed you let me back. That's all I'm saying.
Well, yeah. And this time we're like super happy to actually have you here instead of like you just being a disembodied voice that we talked to over Skype.
Yeah. Yeah. Skype is the devil. It kept Ari Stillman from hacking the cis this week. So if we're going to do anything, we should do it in person because Skype is cis.
So today I wanted to do a kind of a roundtable discussion on the intersection of, well, really, religion and government. I mean, this is a show we could probably do every single week. And I think there are probably shows that do it every single week.
I don't know anyone like that.
And so I just grabbed a few news articles that I thought, well, that really impacted me the most, or maybe not impacted me the most, but caught my attention and like hit like in where my interests are. So the first one I kind of want to talk about was down in Missouri, the Satanic Temple is suing the state of Missouri for, really for encroaching on their religious freedom. So the Satanic Temple, part of one of their tenets is, you know, bodily autonomy. And so you should be able to have an abortion if you want to have an abortion. But state of Missouri, there is restrictions, waiting periods, information that has to be handed out, and the Satanic Temple is like, but that violates our religious beliefs. And if we have religious freedom, then you're putting us at odds. Have you heard of the story? I mean, I can't imagine you haven't heard the story.
Of course, I have heard of the story. I do have to say I disagree with the Satanic Temple only because where am I going to get my baby meats for atheist Thanksgiving?
Church of Satan.
Oh, okay. Great, great. Well, in that case, yeah, temple.
Get hate mail for that one.
Probably.
I love the Satanic Temple for the fact that they are the ultimate religious trolls.
I know.
They just wait for some use of religious talk that was clearly only thought of with Christians in mind, and then they turn it around on them. They're like, oh, that's how this works when we don't endorse a particular religion. Amazing.
Yeah, and in this particular case, I pulled it up just off Pathos. The things that they're mostly upset with is the 72-hour waiting period. And
absolutely.
Then also, I mean, just as – I don't know if this is more or less egregious, but having to look at like anti-abortion propaganda that isn't even scientific. So it's not even accurate. I mean
– and it's not designed to be.
Right. It's designed to fill a specific religious purpose because there are atheist viewpoints on abortion that have nothing to do with religion that are also, you know, pro-life positions. My daughter is pro-life and an atheist. We don't agree at all.
Well, yeah, they make you go through the 72-hour waiting equivalent of driving from here to Duluth and looking at all the pro-life across America billboards.
Yeah, that...
I had a heartbeat at 18 days, yet I'm a full-grown baby now. That's connected.
No. No.
So a bit more in this case. The hardest thing they had the Satanic Temple had was having standing. So they, I don't know if it was a member or if they went out and found somebody who was who wanted an abortion. I was talking to Marissa this morning, and it's a yeah, they went out and paid somebody to have an abortion. And I was like, wait, that does not.
You're going to have to take one for the team, honey. We got precedent to set.
Yeah, so there was a woman that was already going to have an abortion, and they crowdsourced so that they could pay for the abortion because they had to have standing in court in order to be able to take the case to court.
Well, and then plus, actually, it's kind of nice because the person who wanted to do the thing now has the ability to do the thing. I mean, there's plenty of nonprofits out there. Pro-Choice Resources is one. Planned Parenthood, of course, is another, where, you know, getting people, I guess it's almost like a scholarship for an abortion. Basically, it's like I'm trying to think of a great word, but like giving them the ability to do this, even though they don't have the monetary resources, because an abortion is definitely cheaper than having a child, but it's not super cheap either. I think whether you go pill or surgery, it's about $500.
Yeah, and that's significantly cheaper than having a kid.
Oh, yeah,
definitely. Kids like long-term investment stuff. Yeah,
I have fur babies. That's it.
Oh, my youngest daughter is 9. So we're halfway done, and Aiden's parents keep saying, like, well, I want a grandchild, too. It's like, no, we're halfway done. We're kicking them out of the house before I'm 40. If we started over now, that's another 10 years on to it. No.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
As I say, I've also heard that, and I know my parents can attest to this, it's like, you're never really done parenting. Like, you're always there's always going to be in your head at least a little bit.
No, if I went to Penn for one reason, it's so I can send the two of them there so they can be gone in Philadelphia for 4 years, and we can go stay up in a cabin in Ely for half the year and not do anything. Life goals.
That's a good life goal.
All right. Sorry. I was looking at, it's like, oh, there's a call coming in. Hey, cool. Anyway, we'll see if they're going to be a troll who's going to tell us how abortion is the best thing in the world. Or no, wait, I take that back.
you want to revise that?
Yes.
That is so mean.
How could anybody want to have an abortion?
Well, and here's one of the problems I have with some of the abortion issue, especially when it comes to religion, is a lot of times these people are also against birth control. And it's like, if you want less abortions, the best way to have it is good sex education and tons of birth control, because then the kids don't have to worry about this as much.
But they don't want that. It's because, you know, I've talked to a lot of these people, and what they really want is sex for procreation only within the confines of a heterosexual marriage. That's their ultimate goal. So, you know, we can't educate kids on it because then they'll know about it and then they might start having sex. Oh no, because that never happens otherwise. But we also can't have abortions or contraception because they, despite viewing children as like the ultimate present and gift of life, it's also punishment for sex. And it's like, how do you conflate that? I don't understand.
I mean, no, granted, I would definitely consider it a punishment if I had to have a child, but that's because I don't want children.
Right.
Like, unless you count my nephew. If I had to take care of my nephew, he's adorable and cute and I can give him back.
Yes, that's the best part.
Yes. But I totally hear what you're saying, where they're saying like it's a control thing and it's just one of those. It's like I used to work at Fantasy Gifts, which is a sex shop where they sell all the toys and stuff. And one of the big things that you have to fight in that is misinformation, because that's how so much misinformation will go through. For example, how do you properly have anal sex?
I'm listening.
Okay, we can actually go into this.
Really? That's what he said.
Well, you don't want to go in, you know, cold. There's a whole process.
You just got to relax first.
No, there's a process. There's a process. We'll talk about it some other time, but it drives me nuts when people, because this misinformation gets thrown out there and then people aren't doing things right and you can get injured.
Right. And all of this ends up coming from the same thing that you were talking about earlier too, Marissa. It's that whole, the misinformation, the disinformation, and because we don't want you to have sex because it goes against our religious beliefs of it's not, I mean, because they could argue, well, it's for families, and we'll get into that with the next article and then over the next segment. You know, it's for families or whatever, but what they're really saying is they've co-opted that word families to mean their view of how they want a family to be according to their holy book. And anything that falls outside of that should be illegal.
Right, right. I actually had someone one time say that because I had sex with my spouse, that I didn't respect them. And it's like, okay, I grant that you believe this about your religion and you are perfectly entitled to only have sex for procreation. The minute you start casting judgment on me because I don't follow your book, that's where we have a problem.
Right. Yeah, because I mean, I've got lots of people who love Jesus in my family. And we all get along great because none of them are the kind where they're like telling me how I should have to live my life. So, you know, it'd be great. I mean, and that's a lot of times where we, where our atheist activism like butts heads. It isn't with the people that are sitting, you know, quietly at home going to church and whatever. It's the people that are saying, no, this law has to be this way because my book said so.
Mm-hmm.
They need more books.
Oh, yeah, they need better books too. Books maybe that were written more recently.
A second book, perhaps.
Ooh, yeah, like a book of more. Oh, wait, sorry.
Sorry. Hello.
Right. Please stay with us through the break. We'll return to Atheist Talk with our roundtable discussion of the intersection of religion and politics. I'm Maddie Love, here with Hertzy Hertz and Marissa McCool. You're listening to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota, and we'll be back in 2 and 2. KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You're tuned into Atheists Talk. I'm your host, Maddie Love, in studio with Hertzy Hertz and Marissa Alexa McCool, having a roundtable discussion about why Joel Osteen should be Man of the Year, and why I would definitely vote for him if he ran for president. Wait, wrong script. Anyway, before you get back to the show, I want to remind everyone listening live that immediately following this program, you can listen to American Atheist Viewpoint, an official production from American Atheists. This week, Nick Fish, National Program Director for American Atheists, is going to go into allowing churches to receive FEMA funds and the after effects of the Johnson Amendment. It's apparently Christian privilege for the win. If you miss an episode live, you can always catch American Atheist Viewpoint by subscribing to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or the podcast player of your choice. Getting back to a roundtable that would put Camelot to shame, you can get involved in our conversation, incite an incident, or just call in to join us, saying to hell with the religious. Anyway, the phone number while we're live is 952-946-6205. After we're off the air, you can email us at radio@mnatheist.org, tweet us at Atheist Talk, or leave a message on the Facebook post for this episode over at facebook.com/atheisttalk. Mischief managed. Hertzy, you had some board stuff you needed to tell us about.
Well, yes, I have a couple of announcements, just so everyone knows. October 1st is our dinner with the board, which is going to be a homemade Caribbean dinner. It is super delicious. Like, just thinking about the menu is making my mouth water. We're looking at some chicken and coleslaw and this rice and potatoes, or rice and beans recipe. I'm super excited. But that's on October 1st. You can find that at Meetup. And then the Book Fest on October 14th is coming up. We pair up with Free Thought Publishing and we share a table with them. So you should definitely check that out, not just for our awesome, you know, little half table, but also because it is a great festival. That's it. That's all I got.
Well, I mentioned going into the break, we were talking about how religion, and when they talk about family values and stuff, that they're really talking about their religious family, and that's how they define it. And up in Australia right now, they're kind of going through
up.
This. Yeah, up.
Aren't they the land down under?
Yeah, but
because the earth is flat and they're on the bottom side? Isn't that how that works?
I thought that was where the elephants were.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so going down to Australia, they're going through the same process that we did with same-sex marriage, except they get to vote. They have a voting thing where they mail their ballots. Hey, we have a call. Yeah. Wow. Hey, Dan from Hopkins, how you doing? No, now my producer and engineer is saying, one minute. Dan from Hopkins, how you doing?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I was listening this morning, and I'm curious, at what point would it be wrong in the minds of you and your panel for someone to take the life of the unborn human? Is it wrong the day before they're ready to be delivered, or as they're delivered, is it wrong? Or
so,
at what point is it wrong?
At what point is an abortion wrong, or is at what point is infanticide wrong? Or would you, by if we're looking, let's look at definitions. Would you say that both abortion that abortion is infanticide?
I'm sorry, say that again.
So what I'm wondering is, you're saying abortion is wrong. I'm assuming.
Yes.
And then you would also, I would imagine, say that infanticide is wrong. Correct.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if infanticide, where you're killing somebody that's maybe has no chance for life, they're on life support. Is that what you're thinking?
No, infanticide just in general, like killing of an infant.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and
I do. I believe that's wrong. I do believe it's wrong because it is a human being, although it's at its earliest development at conception.
And so just so I can clarify, you would also think that abortion and infanticide are essentially the same thing.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I believe it absolutely.
Well,
at what point do we decide they're a value and they're not just equivalent to a tumor?
Oh, and see, I come at it from the standpoint of bodily autonomy. Like, I am not required to have to provide life for anyone else. And I think our laws kind of, they go in that direction. And that if I have a child who needs, say, my liver or my kidneys, or you can't transplant a pancreas yet, but my pancreas. And giving that child, I am under no obligation to give that child my body part. And without giving them that body part, that child might die. But I'm not legally obligated to do that. So why
right,
should
so
I?
What body part is a woman giving up other than the placenta, which probably could be argument to, for a good argument, could be the babies as well as the mother's.
It's
what body part is the mother required to give up? Because it is an independent life, although it's embryonic.
Oh, yes.
I mean, she's...
It's 9 months of having a lot happen to you. You could almost say it's 9 months of for lack of a better term, of an illness. You know, while you may not be giving up anything, you are adding a lot. And sometimes it can be painful. Sometimes it can be emotionally taxing in ways that... Admittedly, I can't imagine, as I've not been pregnant, and the decisions that go into this can be horrifying. My position is slightly different than Maddie's in the sense of a lot of my thought process is the question of the right to die that we don't really have a lot in. And sometimes, especially when it's late term, usually this is a medical decision. And it's the question of, do you bring something into this world that is going to live for an incredibly painful 2-3 hours simply because something has told you that's what you have to do? Or do you let it go knowing that at least it will be a peaceful and quiet, you know, without suffering?
Or in the case, like there was a case last year or the year before in Ireland where the abortion law said, you know, you can't have this child. Yes, we know that having this child may kill you, but guess what? Get over it. And then she went ahead and, you know, she died.
Oh, yeah.
Contrary to popular belief, pregnancy is not without risk. Pregnancy
so
carries a lot of
risks.
As somebody who works in a lab in a hospital and frequently has to go and collect blood from infants and from mothers who are in high-risk situations, you know, it's having a pregnancy is not a no-risk situation. So if I'm pregnant against my will, I'm being forced to put myself now into a situation that could end my life. And I don't think that's right.
But I think isn't there at least 55 to 60 million babies that have been aborted?
That's irrelevant.
Certainly.
It doesn't matter.
Certainly the percentage of the women that
it's irrelevant.
Endangered, especially in today's technology,
okay.
Is minuscule.
Actually, it's not, because the United States, which supposedly has one of the best healthcare systems, has one of the highest maternal death rates in developed countries. Because all of our stuff is, oh, the baby. Nobody cares about the the adult woman who is having this child.
I would like to see where you found that information. information.
Well, I would love to pull it up for you. I'll see if I can post it over to our Facebook page, because in the hospital system right now, this is something that we're actually beginning to address. Because we've noticed in our hospital rooms treating patients that most of our equipment has been geared towards treating the baby. And so we've started moving like new hemorrhage carts that we can stop fetal maternal hemorrhage right away in mothers. And this is things that we didn't do before because nobody looked at the data. And you know, Dan, while I would love to keep chatting with abortion with you for the rest of the show, because it's a great topic, and I'm definitely pro-abortion, not even pro-life. We are going to go to break instead.
Thank you for taking my call.
Juan, thank you for calling and being so polite about it. We do appreciate that. All right, we'll return to our discussion right after this brief commercial break. I'm Maddie Love, here with Hertzy Hertz, and you're listening to Atheist Talk on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Thank you. Thank you for tuning to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF. I'm Maddie Love in studio today with Hertzy Hertz and Marissa Alexa McCool. Before we continue with our conversation, which will be our last and final segment with Marissa, there is a bit of housekeeping I need to attend to. It's really important to me that we keep Secular Voices on the public airwaves and in podcast form. Atheist Talk is produced with funding from Minnesota Atheists and Cucumbers Restaurant in Edina. Please consider visiting our sponsors, and if you do, let them know that you appreciate their support of Atheist Talk. If you would like to advertise on this program and help keep us on the air, please contact us at radio@mnatheist.org. This radio program is put together by dedicated volunteers and the generous donations of you, our listeners. You help keep Atheist Talk on the air and in podcast. This week, we'd like to extend special thanks to Cindy, who gave through the Atheist Talk link at givemn.org. If you're able to help with a donation, please consider doing so at our Radio Fund page, or you can become a patron of the show by heading over to patreon.com/atheisttalk. Minnesota Atheist is a 501c3 tax-deductible organization. We couldn't do this show without you, and we deeply appreciate your support. Music for Atheist Talk is by composer and member Brent Michael David. As always, check out the Minnesota Atheist website at mnatheist.org, where you can browse articles, book reviews, and the calendar of upcoming events. We always have a ton of activities going on around the Twin Cities and outlying suburbs. Sign up for Atheist Weekly email or find us over on meetup.com. Before we head back to the intersection of religion and government, I wanted to take a minute to talk about a podcast visibility project that Marissa is working on and is really exploding in its popularity.
Yes, of course. Callie Wright and I, Callie is the podcaster for the Gaytheist Manifesto. We got together and at some point we're like, well, we should start our own media network that's similar to other ones, but trans-specifically focused. And our general agreement was that if we're going to do something like that, it has to have an end goal, which we both agreed is helping more voices get heard, because there are an awful lot of people who have a voice but may not have the startup costs or the network. So essentially what we've done is form an alliance of trans podcasters, and our goal with that is to not only have an alliance of trans podcasters, but to use that platform that we have to raise money for those who don't. And by doing that, not only do they have the chance to start their own podcast, but they have the chance to have an ingrown audience of other podcasters who are going to support them. And there are a few things lonelier in this country right now than being trans. So it's important to us that we kind of stick together through times of certain people saying, no, you aren't a person anymore.
Well, and one of the reasons I really wanted you to talk about this today, too, was because although you don't have to be an atheist to be a part of that project, there does seem to be an awful lot of crossover between people who are trans and people who are atheists. There's plenty of spiritual people or people who are transgender who are also spiritual, too. But I seem to encounter a lot more people that would, even if they wouldn't identify as atheist, they would identify as non-religious, or that's not a question I care about right now, because they've gone through so much emotional abuse from religion, and then most of their stress from and their persecution that they're getting in society is because of religion or based in religion.
Of course. There are some very good religious people who have been on my page and who have said, I think God made you to be who you are. And they've been very supportive of that. And I think it's because they're under the assumption that that's the only reason I'm atheist, is because some of the more vocal religious people have gone out of their way to do anything from blame us to hurricanes to accuse us of being child molesters. And while that's certainly not the only reason that I don't want to associate with religion, it doesn't help when, one of the worst storms in history is hitting and people are going, yeah, it's probably your fault because you exist.
Yeah. And we're the reason why, you know, the candidate I don't like got elected is because, you know, you exist.
Oh, fortunately, that hasn't happened any time recently at all. Not whatsoever.
Well, and I remember when because I have my own podcast, and when I started that back in October 2013, it was, I felt like, I think my very first episode, I was talking about, like, I'm sitting in my room alone with a microphone. And it's like, I felt very alone and very alienated. And I didn't know where to go to talk to. I didn't have any resources on who could help me get this project started. And that's what, when you start talking about this, when I started seeing about it and hearing about it, it was like, this is great. Like,
yeah, and some people might say, well, why just trans people? Why not X? And it's like, well, there are a lot of places that are focused towards specific groups of people. There are a lot of places that are focused toward bringing everybody into the conversation. But when it's a marginalized group that has basically been put through the ringer in the last couple of years because people lost the fight on gay marriage and decided to turn around and pivot to us, when that happens, it can be very, very disheartening. And I went to the same school as Trump. So while all of that was going on, there were people on our campus talking about some of those finer talking points about how we're not actually people and we should be kept out of the bathrooms. So I was sort of in the crossfire of it more, and not even by choice, because a lot of people choose to engage in that. And There are a few things that can make you feel more alone than being on a 42,000 student campus and being the only trans person out there counter protesting.
Yeah. Oh. And my other argument for people who are like, well, you know, why are you limiting this visibility thing to just trans people, is the same as I hear from, like, when I'm listening to the Atheist Experience and people call and tell Matt Dillahunty, like, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? It's like, well, go do it yourself. If you want to do a visibility type network to promote your niche of whatever it is, and you think we're doing it wrong, well, go start one. Like, yeah. Granted, not everybody has the popularity that you do. Not everybody has the resources that you do. Like, you know, there are benefits, you know, you're starting from a different position, but there's plenty of popular atheist podcasts that could get behind something like that.
I'm wearing a shirt of ReasonCon 3, which was in North Carolina back this April. And as much as we'd like to think that we're diverse and open, we got a really fine example of how far we have to go, which was my friend John Livingston, for instance, had to put on a name tag that said, not Ishmael Brown. And of course, I was asked if I was Callie.
Yeah.
Callie was asked if she was me. And Celeste, Callie's partner, was asked if they were both of us. So we still have to get past this mindset of, oh, that's the one trans podcaster I know. Clearly, if I see a trans person, it must be them. And even in our network, I think there's 10 of us. And I can name off the top of my head one podcast with 5 straight cis dudes. So, I mean, I love those guys. I love the guys from Scathing and Cogdis. But at the same time, when you can, off the top of your head, name more of one specific group than you can of trans podcasters, that's, maybe there should be more visible trans podcasters, and that's what we're trying to do.
And I appreciate it.
Yeah, we're a few of the lucky ones, and we feel like if we weren't using that to try to help more people be visible and have a voice, then we'd be hypocrites, because we certainly didn't develop our own voices without help.
Definitely. We only have about 5 minutes left in this segment, so I wanted to touch back. Well, we had talked about right before we Dan called in. And hey, Dan, thank you very much for calling in. I know that, you know, we kind of had to cut you off because of the break. When Dan's call was on topic, and so we super awesome welcomed his call. If you're thinking to yourself, God, I really want to call in, I have a question for atheists, and you're like, but it doesn't really fit the topic of, like, anything we've talked about so far. The second Sunday of every month, we do a Q&A with Answers from Atheists. So you can call in with any question you want. You can if Dan, you could call back on that day too and ask again. We'll have a different group of people here probably.
Or you can ask them to have me back and I can answer some questions because I would have been so nice on that last one. That's why I didn't say anything because it was just the niceness of how I would have responded.
I could feel that niceness energy coming from you.
Yeah, it was like wafting off.
Yeah. I'm known for being incredibly nice to... Yeah, let's go with that.
Yes.
I didn't know way came out nicely.
If you happen to be listening to this in Australia, make sure you open up your ballot and vote for same-sex marriage. That is apparently a thing in Australia. You get to vote by ballot or vote by mail ballot.
That is awesome. I want that.
I want that too. I'm sure it comes with its own set of problems and everything else. I get it.
But how many more people would actually probably vote because humans are by nature lazy?
Mm. Well, not only that, but this country goes out of its way to make it difficult to vote. Mm. And that's deliberate. If you can't get people to vote for you, the next best thing you can do is make it super hard for them to vote. So when you have that conflicting ideal, they don't want to make it easier to vote because that's not in their interest. When more people vote, they tend to lose.
Well, and speaking of millions and millions of unregistered voters that voted a particular way, the president on September 11th tweeted out that churches in Texas should be entitled to reimbursement from FEMA relief funds.
No.
For helping victims of Hurricane Harvey, just like others. We have a church-state separation. I actually like the term, I think Amanda Knieff coined it, religion and government separation, because it doesn't apparently care where your church is. I care about the religious aspect of it. But I'm assuming we all kind of agree this is a bad idea.
Well, you're already been in a position where you're receiving tax-free money on tax-free ground, and you pass around that collection plate every week, even if it's a bunch of hurricane victims, right? Nobody did that recently, did they? Anyway, we have this idea that's like, you don't have to pay taxes because you're a religion, so here's a bunch of money that you can use however you want. But then you turn around and say, no, I want that money too. It's like, you can't have it both ways. I mean, I can, because I am not talking about money in that regard, but anyway, when you can't advocate for your own tax-free status and then say you're entitled to tax dollars, you're not paying into that system. Even if you remove religion completely from it, you're not paying into the system. You shouldn't also be entitled to the benefits of it if you're not contributing to it.
And there's no accountability because if you're a church, you don't have to open your tax books.
No.
And that's the part that pisses me off the most about it is because they can just funnel that straight into somebody's pocketbook or into the next, pedophilia ring.
Yeah. I mean, Joel Osteen has how many houses? Joyce Meyer has how many houses? And we're not even touching the Catholic Church.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean...
Well, the Catholic enough Church... people have, so...
Oh, thank you.
Or at least they've touched enough people. That's the same thing, right? Consent is everything.
Oh, that's a sensitive area. That was a bad
That's
joke.
What they said.
Yeah. but that's... I mean, that ends up being the problem. Is like, you already have no accountability. You already aren't paying taxes on any of this. And you can spend this money whichever way you want. It's just, it's so frustrating that the disconnect that seems to be there between, well, we should either get everything we want or you're persecuting us.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I deal with that enough on my own show where somebody says, religious white straight people are the most persecuted. And it's like, no, you're just the most being called out because you're being the most problematic. In the sense of you're telling me and my partner that we're not equally people because we don't subscribe to your book. And that's not okay.
Mm-hmm. No, I look at it and I'm like, it's not pie. You're not losing anything by making sure that other people have equal.
When you're constantly in a state of privilege, equality feels like oppression.
And I mean, if you ask me, I would say equality should be more like the buffet at Cucumber's Restaurant, where there's always enough for everybody.
Now that's a good plug.
And while we joke, it is actually a pretty awesome place.
It is actually really good.
All right. Well, thank you for tuning in to Atheist Talk. I'm proud to be on the air with Minnesota Atheists and hope that you've enjoyed the show. This show depends on the generous support of our members, our sponsors, and donors. Please consider supporting the show through the donation link at mnatheist.org or our Patreon page. This has been Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. The podcast for the show will be available in just a couple hours. Have a fantastic Sunday, tip your bartender, and remember to stick around through this brief commercial break for American Atheist Viewpoint. Bye-bye now.
welcome to the American Atheist Viewpoint. I'm Nick Fish, National Program Director for American Atheists, and thank you as always for joining us. This week I want to talk about the response that we've seen so far to the hurricane down in Texas and the one in Florida, Hurricanes Harvey and Irma. Donald Trump tweeted last week, toward the end of last week, quote, "Churches in Texas should be entitled to reimbursement from FEMA relief funds for helping victims of Hurricane Harvey, just like others." And a lot of people took this as a sign that Donald Trump wanted the Federal Emergency Management Agency to reimburse not just the churches for the aid that they're giving for that they're giving victims of the hurricane, but also to allow FEMA and other government agencies to reimburse churches for money spent on rebuilding their churches. There's a difference between reimbursing the churches for the disaster relief and, you know, providing food and water. That in of itself is constitutionally suspect. I mean, these are groups that, you know, are supposed, that receive tax exempt status because they perform a social good, ostensibly. These are groups that, you know, view disaster relief as an opportunity to advance their mission, and as a way to, sometimes proselytize, quite honestly, but, they view it as sort of linked to their, what they see their role and their duty as Christians or their duty as religious people to do. And they solicit donations, they receive donations to do all these things. That's what it means to be a tax-exempt organization. So when we send, you know, a few thousand dollars down, or Foundation Beyond Belief sends thousands of dollars down, we don't ask for reimbursement from the government. We do those things because we think that they're important and that they're our duty as citizens and as members of the of our community. And so demanding that they be reimbursed is one thing. The other side of this, though, the much more dangerous side, and there's actually a lawsuit that's been filed regarding funding from FEMA to be used to rebuild churches. This was filed by a couple of churches in Texas who want access to a program that's from FEMA that would allow them to receive reimbursement for federal flood insurance and would cover costs associated with rebuilding. They're suing under after the Trinity Lutheran case. This was the Trinity Lutheran versus Comer, which was the Missouri church that wanted to pave its playground and was told by the state of Missouri that because it was a church, they couldn't give them the funds because Missouri has what's called a Blaine Amendment, which prohibits direct funding of religious organizations. And so this would be a really huge crack in the wall of separation between church and state, because for the first time it would say that churches could receive direct federal funding from the government, direct money from the government for religious purposes. And the whole key behind Trinity was that the program was for a health and safety thing. It was about paving and making playgrounds safer. And so some of the justices said that they wanted to limit this to the equivalent of, you know, a firefighter or the fire department putting out a fire at a church, and that denying them those sort of essential services was obviously not constitutional. You know, obviously we sort of disagree with that. And we want to look at the, nature of the use of the funds. And the fact that because the churches are pretty opaque with their finances, we don't know exactly where this money is going. But this lawsuit is not just demanding that FEMA funds be used to, reimburse for disaster relief specifically, but also to rebuild, you know, the sanctuary, rebuild the church itself, the buildings that are used explicitly for proselytizing and for advancing a religious purpose. That's where we have to draw a line here. The federal government being in the business of rebuilding a church, or essentially just building up a church, so that they can perform their religious mission, that's the definition of the establishment of religion. That's the definition of federal money, going to support religious beliefs that the taxpayer, the rest of the taxpayers don't support. That's the sort of thing that the wall of separation is supposed to protect against. And so, who knows what's going to happen here? We're, as with a lot of Donald Trump's statements, no one quite knows what he meant by this. Was he just talking about reimbursements? Was he signaling, his support for the lawsuit that was filed, in Texas? By those churches who want reimbursement or for the damage that they received. What is going on here? And so we need to be vigilant about this. We need to be ready to fight on this, because this could be yet another crack in the wall. And this one would be even worse than Trinity. The Trinity decision was a disaster because it has really wide-reaching implications that we don't fully understand yet, and that first crack in the wall is sometimes the one that opens up the floodgates. But this could be the flood. This could be the flood that, you know, and pardon the expression, that really opens the door to direct funding of religious groups and religious activities by the federal government. And that's the thing that we don't want to see here. The other thing, just as an update that I need to share with everyone, is that, the U.S. House has passed the appropriations omnibus bill that includes the section, the rider in the bill that prohibits the IRS from enforcing the Johnson Amendment as it applies to churches and churches only. This is something that we've been monitoring, that we've been lobbying against, that we've been working in a huge coalition against. We have 4,000 different faith leaders, and we have 5,500 different nonprofit organizations who have come out opposing changes to the Johnson Amendment. No one in the nonprofit community and very few people in the religious community even want this change. They're doing it as a way of paying back a certain brand of evangelical Christians who supported the president and support and already are involved in politics. And, you know, as I said, this is something that would be a disaster for campaign finance. And that's why good government groups, transparency groups, groups that oppose Citizens United, the nonprofit community, the faith community, everyone opposes this change, and yet they're sneaking it through as a rider to an appropriations bill. We still have to see where it goes in the Senate. We're working right now to lobby Senate appropriators to ensure that this provision doesn't make it into the Senate version. But we're also monitoring tax reform and any number of other vehicles for this legislation. So keep your eye out on that. Continue contacting your members of Congress. Talk to your senators now about this, because this is the main issue in campaign finance, in good government, and in church-state separation. This is the big one. This is the one that we have been talking about for years, and for the first time it has the potential of passing. So we have to stay vigilant and stay fighting on this. That's all the time I have for this week. I hope everyone stayed safe during the hurricanes this last couple of weeks. Thank you, as always, for joining us. For more information about what we're working on, or to become a member of American Atheists, please visit www.atheists.org. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next week.